right. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the next episode of the Blindside Blitz. I'm Jimmy Fee, and there is Mr. Joe DiCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back again for the Blindside Blitz with the Blitz Boys right here for you guys. Listen, we're going to get into a lot of topics today. We're going to try to get through them as fast as possible for all you guys, but we need you to stay tuned in and help us out. Head over to the YouTube channel, Grumblings Media. Make sure you hit that subscribe button for us. Hit the thumbs up while you're there. Share it to everybody you know, because that's what it's all about. We're trying to share this. We're trying to grow this channel. We have eclipsed, Jim, over 4,000 subscribers right now.
Ooh,
so we are above the 4,000 mark. You can also check out great articles and other podcasts like ours. Head over to grumblingsmedia.com, and while you're there, check out any articles or podcasts that are sports, entertainment, political. It's all there, one-stop shop. Head over there, and you can also take us on the go and continue to stay in the know on all anywhere right. You get your podcasts.
Nice. All right, Joe. Busy week here. You know, the NFL season comes to a close. A lot of exciting games. And what's funny was with the end of the season in the last game, it's always tough to do picks too because you don't know how the teams are when they start sitting players, resting players that are it's a really good team. How are they going to be able to play to another team, even that's not that good, that still has all their starters in? And we got to see some of that unfold. A lot of close games, but then also nothing greater than the Chiefs getting blown out here by the Denver Broncos. How about that?
Yeah, the Chiefs literally benched every key starter, almost every starter there was, especially on defense. There was not one starter on defense that was playing. It was all the backups. And then you had the offense.
Waterboy too.
They even let the equipment manager in there. Yeah. It was amazing. It was they got to live the dream, for 1 week. Good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Joe, the biggest news of it all is the latest coach firings here. Black Monday was just yesterday, and we're continuing to hear more names as we go. I know some teams are, I don't know why they take so long. They know it's coming. So, usually a lot of times with some of these coaches, it goes right to, I think Gerard Mayo, was right there, right before the press conference even. He didn't even make it into the locker room yet. Robert Kraft's like, hey, buddy. Or perhaps he let him know before the game,
he met him in the tunnel.
It
almost feels like as soon as the game got over, Robert Kraft went left his suite, came down to the tunnel, and as soon as Mayo came towards him, he's like, "Hey, how you doing?" He's like, "Hey, by the way, you're fired." It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter that we just drafted a potential future starter at quarterback in Drake May. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the fact that the Patriots team was in no way, shape, or form ready to win and compete for the division and win in the playoffs. They are just starting to build something. They just found potentially their quarterback of the future. You need to build everything else around him from the ground up. Your offensive line, your receivers, your defensive side of the ball, that needs help. You're just not a quarterback away. You're just not there yet. So, this is one of those firings that really bothers me because this team had nothing before the draft. They didn't have an answer at quarterback. They didn't have even a solid offensive line. They didn't have anything. And now that you've added some talent, you bring in Drake May, he starts at the latter part of the year and looks really good so far. So build on that. I just don't know why on earth Robert Kraft decided to just fire Gerard Mayo when he really didn't have a shot to win.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like I think you openly admitted too. I was like, oh, we made a mistake right from the get go. And that was maybe the question because I said it. I think before that, all that I'm like, well, interim coach, whatever, that's fine. You got to go find that guy. And because I don't think Gerard Mayo is it, but then this team, the way they started playing, and they wanted to try and turn some things around, and they started to. And actually, I think they played better than I expected, especially after that preseason, the way it started to look. You know, I was surprised by it all, but then they, you know, things coming out with Gerard Mayo saying that the team was soft too, and tried to, you know, he's calling upon the team to do something here and blah blah. I think they really. Some people are looking at that as, oh, that was a mistake. He should have never done that, blah, blah. But I think they really responded after that.
Yeah.
They really took to it. That's when they were being very competitive against playoff contending teams too as well. But a lot of people now after this firing are all ecstatic, you know, and happy. And I think the only reason behind that too, they can say whatever excuses they want. But I think that – they just see Mike Vrabel right there. And like, they just want to connect the dots so much. They're like, well, here we go. Mike 100%. Vrabel, he's going to be there with the Patriots now. It's a match made in heaven. Here's Robert Kraft with him. Like, and I'm looking at it as like, well, why didn't you do that in the first place? We talked about it last year. That's what I mean. You and I talked about this when this job was there. Robert Kraft stood behind Gerard Mayo, and we're thinking Vrabel or something else. It was right there. And this is what you do. So that's where I can say, yes, you openly admit, yeah, I screwed up. I made a mistake. This is what I decided to do. But why did you do that in the first place when now, you, a year later, you're going right into Mike Vrabel? And I don't think even exactly right now, if you have Vrabel here in this particular season and not Gerard Mayo, if that makes a difference whether they make the playoffs or not. I'm sure the team plays hard, but they also I don't think got a whole lot of talent here for Drake May either, and they I think there was a, they showed the stats from I think the previous drafts at wide receiver from 2022 until now, and they haven't really panned out.
No, I mean they've been dipping into the free agent pool too often for wide receivers. It's that simple. Like, they really have never used a high draft pick in the past 5 years on a wide receiver. To bringing a hopefully a stud to this offense. Now, even like you mentioned earlier, like even if you brought Mike Vrabel in a year ago, he ended up being the head coach, which honestly should have already happened, but it didn't. They decided to go with Gerard Mayo, and I don't care what coach was on the Patriots. I don't care. You could have put an all-time great head coach, a legendary coach, on that squad and said, here, coach these guys up. But when you don't have the answers at offensive line, when you don't have any real legit weapons, you got some DeMario Davis or Douglas, like he's kind of like that, like that slot receiver that can maybe get open for you and get a few yards, move the chains, that sort of thing. But he's not a number one. He's not a playmaking wide receiver. But that's really all they had. And then you also have, you know, Hunter Henry, you know, at tight end kind of catching the ball because they don't have weapons. It's that simple. They just don't have playmakers. So no O-line, no playmakers on the outsides. And on top of all that, your defense struggled all year. Something that was a strength when Bill Belichick was there. It was a utter abomination for the New England Patriots for this season. And I don't care what coach was in the seat, you're still going to have the same record. You're just still going
to
have
it. And I think even to, despite with and again, I think that goes up to GM, you know, decisions. Because you did have Judon there, and then you ended up, you know, he was talking about getting more money and you know, keeping him there or whatever, contract disputes. And then there he goes now to Atlanta, you know, traded away. So, what are you doing here? That instantly, you didn't have a guy on your roster that was going to create that pass rush for you there and things like that to help generate some of that. Because I think even Christian Gonzalez doing a good part, you know, in that defensive side for his role, at least that he could do, but he can't do it all himself, you know. But that's what I mean. If you're able to get some of that pass rush, that'll alleviate some of that issues there in the secondary. But
yeah,
I mean, Rod Mayo again. Yep, go ahead.
The thing with Matt Judon though is he was aging. They didn't want to pay him a super exorbitant amount. Like, they were trying to find a happy medium to keep him there, but he wanted so much more money. So, I mean, that's kind of where the bridges kind of, like, closed down, and they couldn't make it work, so they decided to trade him. Like, I get that as a football move. To me, that was a smart decision. You know, how much longer is that dude really going to play for? So rather than give him the back up the Brinks truck and give him all kinds of crazy money, now you're tied to him in the low 30s, and you know, maybe he retires the next year and you're screwed in guaranteed money. So I think they made the right move there. I don't think there's real big criticism from me anyway about that kind of move, but they definitely need to continue to add talent, and they are not ready to win games. So for basically Robert Kraft passing the blame on just Gerard Mayo after a rookie year as a head coach, first time being a head coach, and what looks like you got the biggest question answered of all is a quarterback in Drake May. I thought that they should rock with Mayo going into next season, at least to see if they added more talent to that roster, go into next year, and see what they can do. If they improve a little bit, okay, then maybe give them another year and see just how far you could have gotten by building this team up instead of just pulling the rug out from underneath them and just saying, oh, well, you know, we weren't a winning team this year, so, and it's all your fault because we have nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and as far as coaching, you know, coaches that they're interested in right here, is it anybody else other than Mike Vrabel at this point? I mean, we have heard some other different rumors, you know, but if I'm the Patriots, so I'm still just kind of interviewing everybody. I'm not dead set on whoever, but it seems like, you know, there's writing on the wall with some of these and everybody's connecting the dots. But for me, I wouldn't be so sure too, because again, Mike Vrabel knows that he's the most sought out, you know, head coach, I think, now. He's got options. I mean, and then you also don't forget about some other teams that are out there that recently had, you know, fired their head coaches as well. So let's move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Here they go. It's funny. Shad Khan stuck behind, you know, Doug Peterson throughout the season and blah blah, and we knew this, and we just basically said he just doesn't want to do it mid season. He doesn't want to be like that. He's just gonna ride it out. And he even said in an interview that he already spoke to Doug Peterson like a few weeks ago about direction of the team and where it's going, and he knew then it wasn't going in the direction that he wanted it to go. But the thing is too, with Doug Peterson, after three seasons with the team, one successful playoff run, and then the others not so good. A lot of fans and other people are wondering why GM Trent Baalke will return and why his job is still safe, because as far as, you know, free agents that he might have brought in but then also let go, didn't exactly help, you know, their quarterback as well either.
I mean Trent Baalke, though, like, the reason why is because obviously Shad Khan likes the way he runs the ship. You know, like with the free agents that he's been able to bring in, and not only that, but also re-sign key guys and keep them there as Jaguars. It's one of those things where, listen, sometimes the decision-making process for a GM is very difficult because it depends on how involved your owner is. Like
Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence, yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence, you know, that whole extension they gave him, I wonder how much was influenced by the owner and just kind of telling him, do whatever it takes, lock him up, and how much of it was just the GM's decision. Because if that's the case that Shad Khan's looking from, and he sees Trent Baalke, he said, oh, that was all on Trent, he decided you know, we wanted to lock up the quarterback. That's who we have. That's who we envision as our future. And he paid him all this money. But here's the thing is Trent Baalke, you know, he's been there for quite some time. And this team has gone through offseason after offseason. And it seems like just when you think the Jaguars are getting enough talent and they get a key piece here and key piece there. And it's like, but what happened to all the other key pieces that just are not there anymore? You know, it almost seems like a revolving door where they manage to keep certain pieces in line and keep them in Jacksonville, but then every once in a while, there's a failure. C.J. Henderson, corner that they drafted in the first round, that was a high-end pick. It failed miserably. He ends up getting traded for peanuts. and he's been on two other teams since then. You know, so there's been quite some big misses by Trent Baalke, too, in terms of drafting, in terms of talent evaluating. And I'm surprised a little bit that Trent is still there with Doug Peterson being the only guy getting fired and being sent off. Now, this is critical because maybe Shad Khan has given Trent one last chance to be like, okay, you know what? For the most part, I feel like you've done a good job, but this next head coaching hire is going to basically decide your fate. And by no means is there a short list of candidates. I was looking at all these potential head coaching candidates that could be up for a head coaching job, or guys that we might have even forgotten because it's been a little while. Like, you think of Kellen Moore. I just thought of this before, like, Kellen Moore, when he was with the Cowboys and calling the plays, he was seen as that innovator, that more modern, offensive-minded type of guy that the Cowboys had for a while. Then when that regime kind of fell apart, he became available, went to the Philadelphia Eagles. Now he's kind of just been stewing behind Nick Sirianni, who for the most part is calling every single play. And Kellen Moore is just kind of sitting there on the back burner. And now his name's starting to come up where teams are like, hey, you know what? Maybe a head coaching gig, we could bring in an offensive-minded guy like this who could either groom or develop a younger quarterback and also build this offense and make it more modern and creative, and we can maybe be more impactful on that side of the ball that way. So there's guys like him, you know?
Yeah,
the Buccaneers.
Yep, yeah, both those names have been linked to the Jags. They have asked to interview both those guys, and they're looking like that. They're looking at a bunch of different options, a couple other names out there. Todd Monken, Joe Brady, other names out there. Then also, if you look at Detroit, you got Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. Aaron Glenn's stock in head coaching, I think, just went up after this last game and what that defense did with Justin Jefferson and the Vikings here, and just making them so frustrated. Those receivers were so frustrated in that game, and just dropping passes even when they were getting to him, just because of the physicality, they were just out of their game. His stock has never been higher. But then also Robert Saleh out there, and Patrick Graham too also. So they're looking at the options, and I get it. Kellen Moore, I think that's a great one too, especially with success he's had before with the Cowboys, and then even now there with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, so like, I was amazed on how many head coaching candidates there actually are are up for debate, that are up for jobs, and it's a huge list. Like, you wouldn't think, oh, you know, maybe there's this guy. Like, everybody points to, obviously, the elephant in the room, Ben Johnson from Detroit, the offensive coordinator. Everybody's looking at him. You also got guys that are like Zach Orr, the defensive coordinator for the Ravens. His name's been thrown in the hat a few times, but he's only 32 years old. Is he ready? So that's another thing. There's tons of brilliant offensive minds, too. You think of Zach Robinson with Atlanta Falcons. After 1 year of being an OC for them, now maybe he gets thrown into the hat too. Like, there's just an overabundance of names that you could go through and be like, oh man, yeah, I like this guy, I like that guy, I like this, but you can only pick one. So, and it's gotta be a marriage, right? Like, they have to want to come to that team too. It's, even though you may want to sign a former coordinator or an assistant, whatever, they gotta want to be there too.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the other teams I was thinking about when we were talking about the possibility of Mike Vrabel being out there and being a head coach, I know this team right here, your Raiders, I'm sure are going to be vying for him because, like ownership has openly said that Tom Brady's got his hands. He's part of the organization and the group that will be in the staff looking into interviewing quarterbacks for the draft, to staff, to all around. So his right-hand man, Tom Brady, is going to be there right beside him. They fire Antonio Pierce after one full season. You know, he was intern coach last year, and with that strong finish that they had, gave him the coaching job here, and how quickly it turned this year from smoking cigars and having a great time here to a couple of rough games here, rough season, and also the And I don't think they were really – at first they were kind of going back and forth with quarterbacks, but it really turned into just due to injury, it was like you never knew a quarterback was going to be in there too. So it was just all over the place. It's tough for Antonio Pierce because I feel like he never even really had a shot, especially this season with the injuries and things like that. But how do you feel about Antonio Pierce now being a one and done and for the future? And you think, do they want to go in Mike Vrabel's direction here, or are you thinking somebody else?
Honestly, this whole situation was his contract was really only for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So like this first year was
a trial run anyway.
Let's mm-hmm. see if he can handle the job. Let's see if he can uplift this team with coaching decisions in game during the game. And that's where we saw him lacking. Honestly, the way he looked on the sidelines a lot of the time, he looked like he was an assistant pretending to be the head coach.
Yeah.
I never imagined Antonio Pierce, because when you saw him in the offseason, he had fire. He had he was grit. He was in your face. He basically telling the Chiefs to screw themselves. We're going to kick your ass this season. And then he was a shell of himself this year. Yeah. I never saw him yelling at the referees when there was a terrible call. He would listen to the ref and just, oh, okay. All right. Cool. All right. There was no leadership qualities from Antonio Pierce, which honestly, I think that's what led to this decision, is the fact that they witnessed it too every week. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in practice. Obviously, the players love him. They do. They still do. But during games, when it mattered the most, you didn't see that leadership quality. You didn't see that in-your-face mentality. You know, we're not going to lay down or anything. He was a mouse. He was simply a mouse that just never really kind of rallied the guys and got it going.
Yeah, I feel the same way too. That's what I mean. It was a totally different thing from last season to this season. It just weird. Didn't seem like I felt like even too, I don't know, was he being told by ownership or something like that, you know, to do this and that? Because the quarterback thing always felt weird to me. And I don't know if even if it was the GM, you know, because they did fire GMs last season and brought in somebody else too, you know, former Chargers GM too, and he stays, he keeps his job though, and he's able to.
Yeah, I don't know
even
how
after not being able to secure talent, but then also that whole hey, Devontae, you want to leave? Go ahead, here you go, and trade him to the Jets and things like that.
Honestly, that was going to happen regardless. Either they were going to extend him to kind of reduce the cap number next year that he has, or they were going to trade him because a guy that's going to be about 33 years old, I mean, you might as well get the value when you can. But what I will say about Pierce and the Raiders is the fact that I think he was doomed from day one because AP routinely said Aiden O'Connell's our quarterback for the future. Aiden O'Connell's the guy that we're going to rally behind for this upcoming season. Yeah. And all of a sudden, when he made the announcement official, Gardner Minshew's our starting quarterback in week one. Then I knew that it was more Tom Telesco, the GM of the Raiders, kind of influencing what should be done, because Tom just signed Gardner Minshew, paid him some money, and they're like, no, we need to start Gardner. But I think that's where the divide started to happen. I think AP really wanted Aiden O'Connell, but he was forced to start Gardner Minshew. And obviously we've seen the cataclysmic freaking debacle and disaster that was Gardner Minshew. And then you said earlier, quarterback started to go like musical chairs.
Yeah, yeah. Now it seemed very odd, and I think that's when his demeanor changed kind of too. Like I said, it's almost like he was expressing it openly right there without saying anything. My hands are tied right here. Like I'm here coaching the team, but it's not really, I have no control.
Not
right
really
now.
Me.
You know what I mean? So that's what it kind of seemed like to me.
Pierce also did say that he felt this season he didn't feel himself. He basically said there were some decisions or some things I should have done, but I held back and I didn't react like he normally does. So that's the other part is if you're not yourself and you can't continue to be the guy that everybody envisioned you being, and you change because now you have a new position, that's not why they hired you. So AP changed. AP probably was in over his head. I mean, to be fair, he's the first head coach that I know of that went from assistant to head coach, like linebackers mm-hmm. coach to be a head coach of a football team. No coordinator experience, no climbing up the ladder, so to speak, slowly. So I think mm-hmm. he was kind of like rushed into this spotlight, and it was too soon for him.
Now, for you, for head coaching prospects here, are you looking more for, you know, being a Raiders fan here, looking more for an offensive-minded coach to get that offense going a little bit, or, you know, sticking with that defense? Because I think you guys, your defense was really good, and I feel like if you get even somebody like a Robert Saleh still, you still got that fire, you're still going to have a really good defense, you're going to help improve that defense. But I think he's going to also grab the right type of offensive coordinator, I think, to come with him this time. Because I feel like even there with the Jets, especially at the end when he had to, grabbed, you know, different offensive coordinators and stuff like Nathaniel Hackett. There, the whole time he was there, the ownership was really trying to hook and lure Rodgers until they finally grabbed him, and then it was too late. So I think if he's able to really have control too, if you know, they allow him, and then with the help of Tom Brady and his brilliance, you get the help, the right offensive coordinator, possibly working with the GM, that maybe that would be an option that would work, where you still had a good defensive-minded coach and then also get it going here on offense.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I want a good head coach, right? So I don't care if it's offensive-minded, defensive-minded, but with the defensive-minded guy, you need to find a pretty decent or up-and-coming type of offensive coordinator that can be creative and kind of work with the players that they are able to obtain. That's key for a defensive-minded coach. Now, Robert Saleh, you bring up his name, which is honestly intriguing to me where Robert Saleh ends up, because being fired by the Jets, he could have very easily said, oh, I'm going to hop on the next team that might be getting rid of their coach. You know what I mean? There could have been teams that already made up their minds that soon and then could have had him on the staff and then insert Robert Saleh. But he stayed the course. Here he is, where he's in a long list of candidates, though. And it's going to be kind of intriguing to see what interviews he gets. And what team might be seriously thinking about just bringing him right in as a head coach? There's other guys like that with the defensive mindset. You think of the Chargers, Jesse Minter, who's had a phenomenal year as a defensive coordinator in the NFL and is just killing it with that team. Now, to be fair, that Chargers defense always had talent, just never real good a defensive coordinator mindset. So until now, Jesse Minter's nice. When I look at other defensive guys, Anthony Weaver, the Dolphins, his name's been out there quite some time. I mentioned Zach Gore earlier, but Vikings D coordinator, Brian Flores, former head coach from the Miami Dolphins. He had success down there in Miami, but then there was a lot of, you know, turmoil with the owner and whatnot. He's starting to build his resume back up. I've heard his name now being floated around as possible head coaching candidate.
I've heard him floated around with a bunch of different ones, even the Jets, with the opportunity to play against his former team they used to coach, you know, the Miami Dolphins, and, you know, coach that defense that's really good still there too, and they could pick up where they left off and get somebody to fix the offense.
But those are the names defensively that I would like to maybe see a team bring in and seriously give them an interview to see if they could handle the job. Offensively, this is where the kicker is. The list that I look through, there is a ton of offensive-minded candidates out there. Like you mentioned a few earlier, Joe Brady, we said Liam Cohen, Kellen Moore, Zach Robinson. Bobby Slowick from the Texans, his name was out there last year, but never really went anywhere. Right. So ended up staying with Houston. Maybe he gets some more opportunities. Frank Smith, the offensive coordinator of the Dolphins, sitting under Mike McDonald McDaniels, see if he can maybe get some looks at, you know. there is no short list of candidates. There's also other guys, even from the college ranks. I've heard the Notre Dame coach, Marcus Freeman. I'm not a huge fan of hiring college coaches right to the NFL. That's just, I just don't think there's enough success rate to kind of warrant that. It happens, but it's a rarity. Steve Sarkisian from Texas, he's another name that people have been talking about that dude's name for the last five
years. For a long time.
To come to the NFL. I don't know. I don't think these guys are going to come because they're comfortable. They get paid a lot of money.
They get paid a lot of money right there down at Coach College, and they have all the control, too, whatever they want
to
do.
They don't have to deal with the stress of the NFL. It's difficult to win up here. So why not keep recruiting? You can have, like, a 200-man roster, you know, and go into the season. You're not short. So, but there's a lot of guys in the NFL currently, coordinators, assistants, that, like, we just mentioned a few coordinators. There's also guys that are seriously be considered that are special teams coordinators, that are guys that are even assistants, which like a quarterback coach or something of that nature. So it's crazy. This is the crazy time of year for teams that have fired their coaches and now let the games begin, because now it's going to be interview weekly every week from now on.
All right, let's get talking about the Bears here now, too. Eberflus fired midseason, and then Thomas Brown, you know, interim head coach, but not very successful. They had that 10-game losing streak, and then they just finally win their end one, and it seemed like they've won the Super Bowl here. So super excited.
Yes.
Really, the defense doing a whole lot there, too, for them to help them out. But what do you think now for the Bears moving forward? We've heard a lot of different names tied to this team. A lot of people are always going for that top candidate too, that you see. Like you said, Ben Johnson seems to be the guy.
Everybody's talking about
the offensive name. Yeah. So there you go. You know, they all want him. They want this guy. I think I heard something hilarious. I heard the fact that maybe the Bears were looking at Urban Meyer, I think. And I almost died.
No way.
Yeah,
no
so I way. Think that is hilarious. That also, that would be, I would die if that happened.
No way.
Speaking of which, I forgot to bring up with you when you're talking about Antonio Pierce. For some reason, Giants fans are calling for him to go to the Giants, which I think is I don't know about that. I'm good with that. You know.
No, listen. Good. If you want him as your linebackers coach, go for it. Not as a head coach. No way.
Right. This guy's a one and done, and then I'm gonna bring him on to fix the offense and stuff again. Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, I'm good. But the Bears again, what do you think, what will be best here to help Caleb Williams and stuff? Because I've also heard when we talked about what should we call it from the Seahawks, former head coach of the Seahawks.
Oh, Pete Carroll?
Pete Carroll. I've heard Pete Carroll possibly over to the Bears because he had thrown his name out there, wanting to coach, and he has done well with working with quarterbacks. And now, well, at least know Russell Wilson and things like that. Geno Smith rejuvenating his career for an extent. Maybe somebody that also kind of demands respect from the locker room, because we're hearing from the locker room too that there was not a lot of, leadership there. Yeah. So it was kind of a debacle there. They weren't looking for that. They didn't get that from Eberflus, but then ownership even just came out and said, hey, it's the locker room that's supposed to handle that and then take care of that business and stuff like that. And somebody step up to get everybody in line.
The problem with that locker room was that they were pissed off at Eberflus. They wanted him dead. That Jalen Johnson and other members of that Bears team were calling for his head right before he got fired.
But
at his press conference, they were on the side yelling at him. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a problem. When you lose the locker room like that, it's time to go. And the Bears knew that when that was happening. The team was frustrated. They didn't like the direction he was, pointing them in. And it was just time to end it then, and they did. Now it's up to, it's up to the GM for the Bears to kind of really dial in. And we've already seen it. The Bears have been the most aggressive team sending out invites to potential head coaches already. They have a laundry list already to bring in this guy and that guy. They're going to interview Mike Vrabel. They're going to interview, hopefully, all the other big-time coordinators that are available. And they're going to do their due diligence. And hopefully they get it right this time. Because, Jim, I know you felt the same way when Eberflus got officially announced. We both were like, really? That's who you went with?
Right.
So this time
and
around.
The fact that he even made it coming like forth to this season, actually, to start this season, I thought he would have been done last year, after last year even, too.
Right. And this time around, there's better candidates to bring in. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully they nail
especially
one of
with
them.
Even what after it even happened with Tom. It's funny how a game prior to this last year, how almost the same exact scenario happened that when on Thanksgiving Day when the Bears played the Detroit Lions and Eberflus was fired after that because of the end of that game and how that all they managed that. Thomas Brown did the same thing just about play for play. They had a chance to win the game at the end. Not taking care of their timeouts, the game management was terrible, and they end up losing at the end when they had every opportunity to win. And then you saw it again. They're like, "Yeah, this is they need to change this absolutely." And the fact that the players even saying that Caleb Williams wasn't challenged enough, they were looking for a head coach to challenge him. I think that was interesting too, and very telling about what they think about Caleb Williams.
That's kind of hilarious because I think the defenses in the NFL challenged him enough to where he couldn't figure it out. So now you want to challenge him even more and bring in a tougher offense and more complexity. And I don't think that's what this guy needs. Caleb Williams needs simplicity. That guy needs to be basically told what the play's going to be, who I should look for, and then he needs to be taught how to go through progressions. He's all too often at USC, he was just a one-and-done type of quarterback where he only had to look at the primary receiver. If the primary receiver wasn't open, then they told Caleb Williams, make something happen with your feet, create time, then throw it to whoever's open. Like that's been ingrained in him far too long. Now it's time to grow up. It's time to become a much better quarterback, X's and O's wise, reading defenses, going through progressions, and anticipating. That's another thing that he doesn't do the best of, is anticipation of these receivers getting open. Now, he has one of the best teams to work with as a first-time quarterback. We've seen, slight flashes of big-time plays that he made in college, and now he was able to do that in the NFL, but not enough consistency. So, for Caleb Williams, he needs an offensive-minded coach to come in there to help groom him, to create an offense that works well for everybody, and teach and develop him way more than what the college ranks did because they just didn't do enough. Caleb has talent. I mean, listen, you're listening to a guy who did not rate this guy very high. I did not have him as my top three quarterback. And I'm not a huge fan of him, but I'm going to give him props when I see it happen. Now, he has something, but can he continue to grow? That's the biggest thing. So whoever they hire, it has to be an offensive-minded guy who's willing to come in there. And that team is actually the Chicago Bears is probably the most enticing head coaching vacancy to go after. You've got a really good defense already in place. And then offensively, you got some young, up-and-coming weapons. It's just shoring up that O-line and then building Caleb Williams up. So it's going to be interesting to see what direction the Bears do go.
Right, because even, too, in that division, although you've got the juggernauts that are the Detroit Lions and the Vikings even at this point, you still don't know what the Vikings could be potentially next year after the Darnold experiment here. You know, do they instantly go right to J.J. McCarthy? Do they re-sign Darnold for another thing? Or do they let him go? And then also for the Lions, if Ben Johnson goes, how much does that, mess with the offense and how everybody's clicking, despite having all the weapons that they have there, too, as well? and things, and also with the injuries, you know, on defense that they have. So,
real quick,
it could be a whole other different season.
Real quick, you talk about Aaron Glenn. He's getting a lot of looks for head coaching. Ben Johnson, too. And if those guys want to leave, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of them are going to be back. Now you're going to have to find a new D coordinator.
Yep.
You're going to have to find a new offensive coordinator. And most likely, there's guys behind them that are probably ready to step up, but they're not those guys.
Right.
So just how much are they going to lose in terms of creativity or just flat out good coaching?
Right.
So that's going to be something to watch Detroit after this year. How much more affected they are. Do those guys both leave? Does one of them leave? That, you know, it's one of those tough things in the NFL, man. When you build a really good staff, you're bound to get poached. You're bound to.
Yep. And like I said, that whole face of that division could be totally different next season. So who knows with the Bears. One team I want to bring up here, too, that made a lot of coaching firings, but it wasn't even the head coach here. The Bengals fired defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo, and we had brought up his name multiple times during the season, along with linebacker coach James Betcher, defensive line coach Miriam Hobby, offensive line coach Frank Pollock, too, as well. So everybody except for the head coach, you know, kind of like all your coordinators and stuff, you know, which I think is kind of funny. And, yes, I understand the defense, you know, 25th ranked in the league, not very good altogether. But, again, you know, Hendrickson, a beast out there. They had some key players up front creating some pressure. And, yes, I guess they're not ranked very well. But I think I feel also in the offseason they didn't retain some more talent that they had even too and kind of helped that defensive front out too. So they kind of got picked apart a little bit there. Which made that bad. Because I think at times, Anarumo, I think, schemed some good games and been competitive against some of these other teams. But also the inability to run the ball, 30th ranked in the league in yards and attempts. And, you know, it's just that's not a very good way to keep balance. Because even though Joe Burrow, again, lighting it up, doing, you know, 4,000, almost 5,000 yards passing here, Ja'Marr Chase on top of it. Yeah, you could do a lot of air yards and stuff like that and try and score quick. But if you're not balanced and you're one-sided, that really makes it difficult here for the offense to get going. And especially with some the way the offensive line has been not very good, you know, allowing to get those hits there on Joe Burrow too, taking some hits. But I don't think it was actually – it's like coaching's issue for that. I think it's lack of talent on a lot of those sides of the ball.
Well, I mean, one thing I'll say about the offensive line is even though they were kind of beaten up all year, in and out of the lineup, guys were in and out, and there wasn't really much consistency at the offensive line position. They were moving guys around. Cody Ford is typically a guard. He played right tackle this last week. I mean, it's like musical chairs. And then he got hurt. Yeah. Amarius Mims comes in, who was a rookie, who has the potential to be a really good starter for them, but so far just he's not ready. They're hoping that younger guys like that are going to develop over this offseason, are going to get better and be ready to take over the spot for next season. So their younger guys have to step up is what it comes down to. And for their defense, they did go into the draft, and they drafted a couple of D tackles. And unfortunately, those guys were not available even in week one. Like, they missed most of the season, came back later in the year, showed promise, and then got hurt again. It's like they need their younger guys to stay in the lineup to continue to develop. And I think they have something special with those D tackles, because I've seen enough to where I'm like, that defense played different when those guys were in there. And then when they weren't, they looked like Swiss cheese. You know, Trey Hendrickson, as great as he is, he can't do everything. As much as he tries.
He tries,
But they need more talent on the back end of that defense. They even could even upgrade it at linebacker. They have some decent players, but maybe not playmakers there. And that's what they need.
Yep.
They just need a few additions on defense, and then I feel like on offense, they need to get healthier. They just need to stay healthy and keep developing. But that team is not far from, you know, just becoming a juggernaut once again. They are. Look, their offense is crazy.
Yeah, they're really good. I get
crazy
that.
Good. Even with the offensive line struggles, that's the insane part, is that how good Joe Burrow was this year, despite all the pressures and the sacks and whatnot. So I like the Bengals team.
Yep.
But by getting rid of Lou Armadillo is what I'm going to call him, because I had a hard time all season long trying to pronounce it the right way.
Yeah.
I'm just like, forget it. I'm done. But I think this might be the right move just to kind of refresh it on the defensive side. Now I'm curious to see who they bring in, because that defensive staff now needs to be all new. So whoever they bring in for DC, I'm going to be intrigued to see, do they pluck from one of the rivals like the Ravens? Do they get like maybe a linebackers coach, a D-line coach to come in to be their DC, create more pressure that way? So I don't know. We'll see what happens with them in the offseason.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, do you think, say Robert Saleh ended up getting picked up by a team to be an assistant coach, stuff like that, but do you think he really goes back to, even though he's, because he has, being looked at as another head coaching jobs, but do you think he does return as a defensive coordinator again, prove his worth again, and then potentially become, another head coach somewhere else?
Yeah,
defensive coordinator for the Bengals now, I think.
We have seen that happen. Look at Kellen Moore,
mm-hmm.
a guy who was an OC, kind of sat behind, basically behind the curtain and behind Nick Sirianni, and now his name is being popped up again. 36 years old. Guy's young. He's still in his prime as a coach. And now he's starting to be brought up. Now the same thing could happen to Saleh. Saleh could either be a head coach, or maybe Saleh wants to take a year off again and just says, hey, I don't want to be a head coach. I'll consider being a D coordinator for the right team, And then when he's ready, then he'll pursue head coaching again. But we'll have to see.
Right.
I mean, honestly, Saleh's another hot name out there. So I'll be intrigued to see if Saleh takes head coaching interviews or not. Because if he doesn't, you can already see that.
Yeah, like Brian Flores. Yeah, head coach and then now, defense coordinator. Now potentially looking back to be a head coach again. Well, I know again, but, not being a head coach anymore, then taking a job, defensive coordinator, almost, like he was saying, blacklisted from the league. But then also look at it this way. Look at Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer, head coach for a long time. Now a defensive coordinator again, I'm not saying he decides to be a head coach again, but we've seen them revert backwards a little bit and say, take a step back. I'm like, I'll go back to being defensive coordinator. Look at Dan Quinn, defensive coordinator, hired as head coach for the Atlanta Falcons, but then defensive coordinator for the Cowboys, and now he's, again, the head coach for the Washington Commanders. So we've seen this a few different times, so I'm wondering if that may be the route with Robert Saleh.
The only problem I have with coaches like Zimmer, guys that have been around far too long, guys that, he's trying to be a D coordinator for the Cowboys, which I think if you didn't have that kind of talent like Dallas does, they got a lot of playmakers on that side of the ball. If he didn't have the talent, I don't think he's that good of a D coordinator, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I think he used to be. He used to be a really good D coordinator. I think now there was like defensive plays that he would call in certain situations, and I'm like, why'd you blitz there? You just gave up an easy first down. So I hate guys that have been in the league really long time. Like Pete Carroll, we'll just say him for an example. A guy that's been in the league very long time. Yes, he had success. I get it. But they're getting up there in age, and now you're getting a second try, a third try. Those guys are known as retreads. I think teams need to stay away from those type of guys and go for the up-and-coming, the younger, the guy that has more – maybe they have more passion. Maybe they're just – they're so creative in what they do as a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator. You want to see what they can do with just being the leader up front. So I hope, because there's a ton of young up-and-coming coaches, I hope every team that did fire their head coach this year, look for these up-and-coming guys, get them on your team, and let's see what you can do in the future.
Yeah, and I only kind of bring up the fact with these guys, with the Bengals, and seeing this many coaches fired in one shot. I've seen this before as a Giants fan, that it kind of seems like to me that, you know, like Zach Taylor has a target on his back, and he's got to start making excuses for some things. He's got, all right, this, what did we do, not do well? This and this. He's like, I hate to do it. Sorry, guys, but it's either you guys or me at this point. So boom, 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 no, boom. And I kind of bring it up. If you kind of look at his tenure, though, which is look at his tenure, Zach Taylor, 5 seasons, 37-44-1 is his record, 5-2 in the postseason, which is fairly good. But again, still not winning, you know, the Super Bowl when they've been able to get there, which we've seen head coaches get fired for not doing that. You know what I mean? Which I think for me, a lot of times is astronomical because, if the Giants made the playoffs every single year, but they did not win, I'm still happy with that. That's a good team because you're competing every single year and making the playoffs. I feel like, you know, when people put the expectation word around, it's kind of like too much of a thing. Like, hey, expectation, they are expected to win the Super Bowl. Nobody expected to win anything, maybe compete to try and make it. And everybody's goal is to win the Super Bowl. We get that. You know, and maybe we have the talent to achieve that goal, but expectations, I think, is a crazy thing to throw at teams because things like that happen. Look at what happened now with the Jets. The Jets had Rex Ryan there making the playoffs with a team that wasn't even exactly supposed to even be there. You had Mark Sanchez as your head coach, as your quarterback, and they were doing things. And then turmoil within the team, ownership, Rex Ryan, blah, blah. Got rid of them, and they haven't been right since. And now they're even kind of knocking on the door and giving them a ring again. Hey, man, hey, want to get the gang back together? You know, things like that. And as I think when you have coaches that can have consistent winning, and you decide, hey, I'm going to get rid of them because it just wasn't hitting expectations that we wanted to go. Hence, even the Cowboys. I think that's when you turn into issues and have problems.
Well, so far, the Cowboys have been smart, and it seems like they're keeping Mike McCarthy. It seems like they're going to give him an extension, but they have until the 14th before other teams can start talking to him, and that's going to be interesting to me. They got 7 days. They got 7 days to get it done.
7 days to figure out.
Because if they don't get it done in 7 days, you already got to, you got the Bears. The Bears asked permission to interview him. Cowboys said no.
I said no,
and because they're trying to get a deal done.
That says something there. The fact that they didn't put a statement out.
But if they don't, on the 14th, Bears could call them right away. Say, hey, we want you to come interview for the Chicago Bears job. You know, and what's to say? What if he ends up getting stolen? You know, the Cowboys are trying to work out a deal, and then a team calls him. He goes, takes the interview, and ends up signing there.
Yeah. No. Right, and this is what the Cowboys seem to be doing every single year with every single situation when it comes to money. They're like one of the biggest franchises and net worth franchises in the world, and they nitpick money here and there and whatever. And then eventually they give a deal to a guy or whatever and get stuff done. But the negotiation thing between it all, it always the timing ends up being wrong and way stretched out way too far than what it really should have been. Get into the room. Don't let them read the room until you get the deal done. Get it done. You know what I mean? And this whole thing where it's been up in the air throughout the season and Mike McCarthy, and everybody's already talking about him being gone. And if he was, though, why didn't you release a statement yet? So that tells me, again, that they're trying to work something out now. But what is Jerry Jones saying? Is he saying, hey, yes, you've had, you know, 3 seasons or whatever, 12-5 or whatever. That was good, but this season, yeah, it was kind of underwhelming. We didn't get it. You know, so what can we do here? You know what I mean? Doing all this thing. Yeah, exactly. But why are you even saying that? Like, yes, we understand you didn't have Dak Prescott. We had a lot of injuries. But I think even it was amazing that they were able to stay competitive. Cooper Rush did well. They won some games even too with Cooper Rush. Even when the defense, after the injuries that they had, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't stop anything without their key players. They got the defensive players back. They're winning again too. That was key. And what are you going to do? You're going to do better than Mike McCarthy right now? You know, and especially it seems like he's the right type of fit to deal with Jerry Jones.
I mean, honestly, with Mike McCarthy, he's super successful in Dallas. Why there shouldn't even be a conversation that we're having
right.
why he might not be a Cowboys head coach. Like, it's absolutely insane to me. This reminds me of, I've mentioned him before, Marty Schottenheimer with the Chargers. Mm-hmm. He brought the Chargers to many playoffs. It was almost like a guarantee. And then he was the Kansas City Chief head coach, brought that team to the playoffs. But he still gets fired. Like, if you're routinely making the playoffs and you have a legit shot of possibly making the Super Bowl, why would you fire that head coach? Which brings me to Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
He had, what, two or three seasons at 12-5, like winning mm-hmm. seasons. And we're discussing right now the possibility of moving on from him. That just blows my mind. When you have a head coach already in place who's winning games for you, is a high seed routinely in the playoffs, it sucks that they're one and done, but he's making it. They're killing it in the regular season. And as much as there's a lot of Cowboy haters out there, you got to give them their due.
Three seasons, 12-5.
It's mm-hmm. crazy to me. That this is even a topic right now. Like, Jerry Jones, what the hell are you doing?
You know what I mean? That's what I mean. This first season, 6-10, but yeah, you're getting underneath the reins of everything. You had Andy Dalton as your quarterback. 12-5. You lost the wild card. You lost the division, and you lost the wild card.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But
this is the guy we're firing, by the way.
Right, but if you look at this team and this franchise, though, they have multiple winning records here and there, and if you look at playoffs, I'm just looking at on Pro Football Reference here, when they made the playoffs, it was they lost in division, lost in division, lost in division, lost in division, lost in the wild card, lost in the wild card. They're making it to the playoffs again, and consistency, they've gone through Wade Phillips, Parcells in that time, Garrett, held on to Garrett for a very long time, but again, they're still – winning, making playoffs, mm-hmm. and then from Garrett they go to Mike McCarthy, which again, winning, making the playoffs, which for me, I think, though, is also good enough for the Cowboys because that's what they kind of preach right now. They preach that, hey, we're a good team. We're expected to win, or we can win the Super Bowl. This is our year. It's the Cowboys. Woo-ha! You know, we're America's team. and that's more important than anything. The star is bigger than anything. You know, we are the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And so this kind of make the playoffs every single year and stay competitive and, like, we're just a solid team fits into that mold of what they're kind of preaching here, what Jerry Jones preaches. Yet, on the other hand, when you're not winning the Super Bowl, it, you know, seems to be an issue, right? We're not going in the right direction that we want. I think it's very, you know, strange, you know, but – So, I think the fact that they haven't put out a statement yet is they are working something out. It would be dumb, I think, if they let him go, because I think, again, longevity, I think so, he's doing a good job here with them. I think if they get a running game going, they can have something here and stay healthy.
Here's the other part of that. If, think about Mike McCarthy from day one, implementing that offense. Dak Prescott has never looked better with that offense.
Right.
And that team, offensively anyways, headed in that right direction. That defense, when they get all their pieces in line and they're all healthy, that team is tough. It's tough to deal with. So why? You can't let this get to the 14th. Like, I can't stress this enough, because I definitely think Mike McCarthy could possibly be swept up, and it could be that quick where you have the Bears saying, come in right now. We're send a jet to you, fly him in, and don't let him leave until they sign him. Like, that could be a couple teams like that that want his services so badly that they're like, dude, we'll take a 12-5 head coach.
Now, Now, let me run this scenario, and I think it's even been said around here. We do – we are stationed here in upstate New York. I have been hearing, again, floated around now. Say Mike McCarthy becomes available. Do the Jets fall into that same trap again and say, hey, Aaron Rodgers, Devontae, you guys are still here. We can keep you still here. What if we get Mike McCarthy now to become your coach? You guys can reunite with him now. And then here we go. We can turn it around and we can work it out again. And Aaron Rodgers is like, yeah, Mike McCarthy's available. Go bring him in. I'll stick around then. Devontae loves it. It's going to be like the good old days. Do the Jets fall into that trap if Mike McCarthy becomes available? And if they do, do you think they just become a – is that a mistake, or do you think he's the guy to make it work?
I honestly don't think it would be a mistake if they brought in Mike McCarthy to be their new head coach for the Jets, because the team has talent. Like we've seen – we talked about it in the offseason, how we were amazed on what they were able to accomplish in one offseason in terms of gathering offensive talent, trying to shore up that offensive line. We know now that that offensive line – can run block, but they can't really pass block.
No,
you
can't pass block at all.
So, but you have Garrett Wilson. You made the trade for Devontae Adams. Things started to look, at least on paper, like, oh, wow, they pull off that trade.
Yeah.
Maybe they can turn things around. It just never worked out. But with Mike McCarthy, though, a guy who is an offensive-minded guy, a guy who has done wonders for Dak Prescott, to rekindle that relationship with Aaron Rodgers would be very intriguing, I think, for him. And I think that that would be a smart move for the Jets. However, this is the Jets we're talking about, and they don't normally do smart moves. So
smart moves is not in their vocabulary.
And to be honest, Rodgers right now is talking like he's possibly retiring. And it is crazy to think that a guy just a year ago was saying how healthy he is, how great he feels, and he can't wait. He wants to play another couple years, to after dealing with the Jets and what happened there. Yes, he does. He definitely deserves part of the blame for sure. But I think it's making him realize, like, maybe I don't want to continue my NFL quarterbacking duties.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time. Maybe it's time that I focus on something else, you know, and not football. And if you watched his last press conference, it was interesting because he really spoke like he was really thinking this could be my last game ever.
Yeah.
I might just walk off into the sunset, go into the dark room for the next year and start doing farming, you know, start fishing, start playing golf. Like, who knows what this guy's going to do?
Right.
Travel to Machu Picchu.
Never know.
Do some witch tricks down there or something like that.
Who knows? Yeah, move into the jungle somewhere, you know, saving sloths and doing
and
who knows what happens.
Aaron Rodgers is an enigma as a person. We just never know what this guy is going to do. I think right now the Jets don't have a decision right now. I think it's going to really depend on Rodgers what he wants. Does he want to keep playing? And if he wants to keep playing, does he even want to stay with the Jets?
Right.
Does he want to pursue a different with a different team and maybe do something there? So there's been a lot of chatter lately of Rodgers obviously retiring, but also what if, because it seems like the Jets are done with him too. It seems like Woody Johnson up in his suite is like, he played terrible. I want him gone. You know what I mean? Like, that guy seems to be making knee-jerk decisions by firing Robert Saleh this season. And then now you're getting to the end of the season where it sounds like they're not happy with Rodgers. They want him gone. And if you move on from Rodgers, Adams is not staying. He's just not – it's not going to happen. He's not going to stay without Rodgers.
Yeah, he's done that before.
He's not going to go through – a rookie quarterback and trying to work with him and all that. So he might jump ship and go to a competitor or a winning caliber team to try to win another Super Bowl before he's done. So it's going to be really up to Rodgers. Depending what he decides is really going to dictate what the Jets do going forward.
Yeah, and what's funny is, that, like you said, I mean, yes, he didn't play the best, but he did play horrible either. It's just, when you have such a good career that he's had to, that this year, you know, again, I think he tied a record or broke a record. He's in a group, too, where
he had 500 touchdown passes.
500 plus, but then also consecutive years with 25-plus touchdowns, I think, too, or something like that. And he had 28 touchdowns and 11 INTs this year, and see the INTs were the most we've seen out of Rodgers. But I mean, he's human, you know. I mean, he's not going to go 28 and 5 every single season. But I don't think he exactly lost them games. But that pressure, like you said, the lack of pass protection, where he did to make some of those bonehead interceptions here and there, didn't get it going. But you know, I'm surprised, you know, they couldn't get Breece Hall going in the running game too, going at all with this team either. As I hope they could
because they were down too often. They went away from the run game. Yeah. They fell down early, and then they had to almost basically abandon the run game. That they probably had plans every week to become a balanced team, but then all of a sudden teams were up by 21 points and like, oh crap, we're gonna have to throw our way back into this one. I think offensively they misused Breece Hall. I thought that even if the game is out of reach, throw him the ball. Like out of the backfield, dump the ball off to him, get him in space and see what he can do. That can count as a run. So the Jets thing is kind of hilarious because the other part of this too is if you're a head coach, do you even want to go to the Jets because you have Woody Johnson who has already basically just fired Robert Saleh in the middle of the season on his own. No advisement. Just took a flight home and said, you know what? Get Saleh in here. You're fired. Get out. Mm-hmm. He did that all on his own. The GM wasn't aware until after it happened. Nobody was aware. So if you have an owner like this who's kind of just quickly deciding, you know, what to do, who to fire all the time, to me, that's not a very attractive job.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the way it was done, a lot of people shocked by it all. And this is what was going to happen. You keep running the team like this, you know, this is going to be an issue. We're going to touch on one last team that, you know, didn't fire anybody, but decided to make put out a statement here that said these guys are staying back. We're standing behind the game plan that they have moving forward, and it's been under controversy as well, and that is my New York Football Giants. The Giants ownership stands by Shane and Dable, says, hey, we see the plan. We're continuing on with them. There will be no changes here, and that's our plan moving forward. But we shall see maybe after this next coming season here with these two together, will it eventually split off, or who will they keep? Who will they get rid of them both together? Are they? Because I've even heard rumors that these two aren't exactly even chain linked together. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there could potentially be a firing down the line. One of them stays, one of them goes. You know, it goes. So.
Or they both go, right?
Here's
the thing is, Joel Shane also, when he did his press conference at the end of the year, also said, after obviously they were told that they're staying, said that this is not going to be a quick fix. I'm not going to try to rush things. I'm going to be very methodical, and we're going to slowly build this team into a contender. And that's what you have to do. You can't rush things. We've seen teams before in the past. When Dan Snyder owned the Washington Redskins at the time, and he tried to buy a winning team, pay all the expensive free agents, brought them all in, said, oh, we're going to win the big one now, and they failed miserably. You can't substitute a winning team by just bringing every free agent in or trading for some other veteran. A free agent from another team. Like, you just can't rush it. You have to slowly build the roster and build the team smart and methodically. And that's basically what they're preaching in New York right now. Is they're saying, listen, we got Malik Nabers. He panned out. Like, he as a rookie, he was amazing, right? So you got one key asset there. They got to figure out the quarterback position. You know, 110% the reason why both these guys are given another shot is because Daniel Jones, let's face it, that's not the reason why they came to New York. They didn't come to New York because, oh, Daniel Jones is a quarterback. I want to go work with him.
No, right.
They now have a legit chance to get their guy. When whoever it is, they're going to pick a quarterback that they really believe in, and then they're tied to the hip with them. So if they can groom them over the next year, 2 years, and things are looking well, like you think about Drake May and how he came on at the latter part of the year, that gives the Patriots hope because it looks like they found the quarterback. Now, if the Giants can do that this year, whoever they decide to draft, and it shows promise next year, their jobs are safe. I feel like they're both going to stay there. But Joe Shane's definitely got a lot, and I mean a lot of homework to do, because after losing Saquon Barkley in free agency last year, the owner did not take too kindly to that. He said, basically, I'm not going to quote him, but he said along the lines of, I can't take it. If Saquon Barkley goes to the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm not going to be able to sleep at night. Like, he was very upset, not just because they lost Barkley, but he also went to the Eagles.
Exactly. A competitor.
Honestly,
yep.
They paid him the most money. Obviously, that's what you're going to decide to do.
Yep.
But now it's in Joel Shane and Brian Daboll's hands. Now they have to continue to make the right decisions. So far, it seems like they're down the right path, but they need a lot more talent to accumulate.
Right. I mean, you do see some signs here, at least with, you know, getting Neighbors here, drafting him right there, having the opportunity to get him. So now you do have a number one weapon here for the quarterback, whoever it might be. And now if they're given the reins and they're going to put out their game plan, it looks like it's multiple years investment. So this year, with it technically being a weaker draft class for quarterbacks and sitting there at three, a lot of people even think that maybe they'll miss out on the quarterback that, you know, a lot of people think that they should potentially get. Do you see them trading out or getting another offensive lineman or whatever, something else to help build that front and be strong, and then come back either with a quarterback late this draft or wait till next year to get that franchise quarterback?
Here's the thing. Honestly, I don't think they can wait. They can't. They have to take a quarterback. It doesn't have to be in the first round, but they have to take a quarterback within the first two rounds. They have to. They have to. There's no way they come out of this draft in the first two rounds and don't take a quarterback.
Without one.
And they, at picking at three, there's a potential. If the Tennessee Titans don't take a quarterback, because that's another team that you got to think, the Will Levis project doesn't look like it's working out. I know it's his first year under the Brian Callahan offense, you know, so maybe they give him a grace period one more year, but they're picking high. So why not take another quarterback and then have them duke it out in the offseason?
Yeah.
If that's the
they've done it before too.
If that's the case, is it Shedeur Sanders? Is it Cam Ward? Is it someone else that so far there's other quarterbacks that are kind of, you know, they're flying up the ladder here.
Right.
But as we get closer to the draft, we're going to have a clearer picture, and we'll definitely have a clear picture for you guys when we do our own scouting and give you our own synopsis and opinions on the prospects coming out. But I'll say this. It's going to be whether it be Shedeur or Cam, because we all know the Patriots aren't taking a quarterback. You know, Tennessee's iffy. They might. But even if they do, the Giants, I think, would be happy if Cam Ward was there. I think that to me, from what I'm hearing from New York, I'm at least initially, because we are still very early in the draft process, that's the initial rumor, is that they really like Cam Ward and what he has to offer. So if that's the case and he's there, I definitely could see them taking him at three, third overall, and then developing with him. If not, they could trade down. That's not out of the realm of possibility. They could trade down, gather more picks to help build this roster because they have other needs, and then take best player available. Maybe you wait to the second round, the top end of the second round, and then take a quarterback and see what you could do there. It's going to be interesting because for the first time in a long time, this draft is weak at quarterback, but there are going to be a couple players, not going to reveal them right now, but there's a couple players that are on my radar that I think will rise up the rankings, and I think they might be picked in the first round at some point. Where the Giants could also do, where they trade down and take one of these players and move on with that. So, but I definitely think, Jim, that 100% the Giants are definitely taking a quarterback early. It's not going to be waiting till middle rounds and taking hopefully like a Dak Prescott or something. This is a weak quarterback class. If you want one, you got to take one early.
All right, Joe, we have breaking news here just now. It was coming across the wire here for now. The 49ers will not retain Nick Sorensen as defensive coordinator. We know the 49ers, their season, that is a disappointment. When you talk about, maybe we'll have a segment, you know, towards the end of the season here about, you know, disappointments and surprises and stuff, and the 49ers got to be one of them. But injuries throughout the season, though, so many, and their defense now ranked 29th in the league. Very disappointing. So now he will not be there anymore. And what does that mean now? Again, you want to talk about Robert Saleh again? Why not, you know, go back to the 49ers, be defensive coordinator, then get a head coaching job again? You're back with the guy that you came from. You know what I mean? You go right back in like nothing ever changed, you know? And who knows?
That maybe phone call, help bring this you know that right phone there. Call is going to happen. You know that for a fact that you know, Kyle Shanahan's going to call up Robert Saleh right now. Like, hey, bro. What are you doing? What are you thinking? You thinking about going head coach, or do you want to come back home where you started?
Come back home
And rebuild this defense. But I'm gonna say Nick Sorensen. I don't think it's his fault. I gotta say, like, when we talked about this in the offseason before we even got to week one, we said, do not be surprised, 49er fans, that this defense is gonna be a shell of itself compared to the season prior. You guys lost too much at the D tackle position, too much value there over the years. DeForest Buckner leaving, you know what I mean? Javon Kinlaw, you guys basically just let him go in the free agency. He left, and then you did a good job by getting Javon Hargrave, but he got hurt this year, and then you were basically playing with a third string D tackle and Malik Collins, who honestly is a journeyman D tackle. And then opposite Nick Bosa, Leonard Floyd, really? That's your other pass rusher? So this defensive line was extremely weak compared to what they were a year prior. The linebackers were still there, but Dre Greenlaw was missing, you know, came back latter part of the season, but still wasn't there for the majority of it. Huifunga, the Pro Bowl safety for the Niners, was out of the lineup pretty much until the last few games. Then he got hurt again. And Charvarius Ward, their number one corner, was unavailable for pretty much most of the year. So you're going to pin the blame on the D coordinator for, oh, you know, this team didn't do well under your supervision. I'm sorry. You didn't have the talent, you know, all year to be a good defense. So this move right here tells me that Kyle Shanahan has a lot of power in San Fran. He's got a lot of power. And for him to kind of basically blame the D coordinator for this season's debacle is kind of crazy. When you had a mountain of injuries on that side of the ball, and you wanted this guy to make magic happen out of thin air.
Right. I feel also that maybe he felt like something did have to happen after the season being such a disappointment. I know that, you know, John Lynch wasn't going to be like, oh, Kyle, you didn't meet expectations at all. You guys were terrible. You're fired. You know what I mean? I don't think that was ever going to happen.
No, I feel
like Kyle Shanahan felt like, he had to do something, react some way in having, you know, an excuse kind of for what had happened. Because you saw it even in press conferences, the way he was reacting and stuff and handling the media. He was uncomfortable a lot of different times with people saying about, you know, what's wrong with you guys? How are you guys going to turn around? And then he had to keep answering those questions like, oh, I don't know. We're not.
It's pretty awkward
good.
When you're losing.
When you're losing, right?
It's pretty awkward. Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't know how to take it. So I think this is a reactionary thing. Like, he felt like, all right, well, I gotta do something after this. You know, I can't just say, hey, everything's okay. We're going to run it back again.
And here's the more pressing need too, is now that you fired the D coordinator, Charvarius Ward has already pretty much announced it's too difficult to play in the state of California due to his daughter who passed away last year. It's a tragedy. And honestly, I think he's going to go into free agency and leave the state because he just can't deal with it anymore for obvious personal reasons. So they're going to lose their number one corner already. Huafunga, he's also due to be a free agent. Like, there's guys that they're going to have to shell out some money to keep, and you need to rebuild this defense. You need better D tackles. You need a better pass rusher than Leonard Floyd. You need possibly a safety if you can't bring Huafunga back. You know, they have talent. I mean, they got Renardo Green, who came in as a rookie, played pretty well. Looks like he's going to definitely step into that starting role. But this team definitely has some work to do on defense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking about the 49ers quick before we move on to a couple different topics we have. Brock Purdy now, his future there with the team. They do have the option, I think, to tag him, I think, this year, right? And then work something out here, too. But he had such a great success throughout his career early on. Again, Mr. Irrelevant, we know, last pick of the draft. What he's been able to do in that first season there, too, if he's not injured, they're going to even possibly, the Super Bowl. But then even coming back from injury, playing well, touchdown to turnover ratios, looking good, known as a pretty clean quarterback, making some plays with his legs on top of it, too, as well. Again, not expected a whole lot. But then this season, he had a few more interceptions that we're used to, get banged up a little bit. Not the Brock Purdy we're kind of used to seeing. So does that hurt his, contract now? Because again, they've got to eventually pay him now. They've been able to try to win here with the talent that they had, secure the talent that they have at the wide receivers, and running backs, for that matter too, in the defense that they had to win championships. Right. They had multiple opportunities to win the Super Bowl and just came up short a few different times.
Yeah, we can put the blame on Kyle Shanahan.
Well, that's the key opportunity that teams try and do. You want to draft that quarterback that you're on that rookie deal, get talent around him, and then you win, and then you eventually have to pay him, but hopefully by then you've already got a Super Bowl or two, or you can even keep it going. Now it's time to pay the Piper, and they haven't gotten that Super Bowl win yet. Deebo Samuel is getting older. He's didn't really have a good year at all, too. He almost made my naughty list when I did my naughty or nice list here.
Dropped enough footballs.
Oh, just so many. And so Brock Purdy now with the picks that he's had this season, a down year, does that hurt his contract here, or what do you pay a guy like that? What's the future here for Brock Purdy?
I mean, honestly, Brock Purdy is the future. Like, what you've been able to basically pay this man near $1 million a year for the output that he's been able to do is tremendous. Like, it's insane. When you look at, like, he's never had a QBR lower than 94 in the three years that he's played. His touchdown interception ratio has never been 500. He might have had a down year this year, 17 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, but you're looking at the other 2 years, 22 and 23, and you're like, holy crap, this guy's amazing. He had one down year, I guess you could call it. I mean, 17 to 10 is not great, but it's not terrible. And what this guy's been able to do in certain moments of the game is amazing in his short career that he's already had. He's super young. He's in his prime. There's no other reason to kind of like say, really debate, like, should we really, sign Brock Purdy? You've chosen Brock Purdy as Mr. Irrelevant to become your starter and has never looked back, and he's done a really good job. This year, it didn't work out the way they wanted. But also, you got to take into consideration Brandon Ayuk goes down early. No more deep threat. That really hurt the Niners offense, believe it or not. Even though he wasn't getting the ball a ton, that threat of having that guy that can take the top off of defense, that went away. And that changed how they had to run their offense. Deebo, you mentioned him earlier, dropping footballs, wide open, even contested, like anything, just dropping way too many footballs, getting injured way too often this year. You mentioned his age. He's getting closer to 30. He might be 30 next season. I think he's 29. But again, what do the Niners do with Deebo? Do they even re-sign this guy? Do they let him go? Ricky Parasol, we saw him in his rookie year. Did a pretty good job. Pretty good job as a rookie. And why hold on to Deebo when you have a guy who's up and coming and you're not paying him anything in Ricky Parasol? So there's some changes in this offense that might happen this offseason, but also the injuries. We talked about defense. Offensive injuries, too. The offensive line. Trent Williams, second half of the year. Where is he? He's on the bench. You know, so we don't have our pro bowl tackle. And then your right tackle, McKivitz. He got injured, missed a few games. So it's like, what do you want the guy to do? Just what do you want the guy to do? You don't have Debo's in and out of the lineup. Oh yeah, George Kittle, by the way, too, missed some games.
Juwan Jennings.
There was a week where Juwan Jennings was the go-to guy and no one else was available. Yeah. So, and your running backs, McCaffrey, not healthy. You know, they were lucky to find Jordan Mason and how well he played until he got hurt. So this team just, one, was never healthy enough to compete. Two, too much inconsistency. Brock Purdy, that led to a down year, but it's not so bad of a year to where you're like, well, I don't know what we're doing here.
Yeah, and when you talk about it, and if you look at contracts, you know, I know a lot of these, you want to debate contract. Is he worth it? This. We've done it with Dak Prescott, stuff like that. Now Dak Prescott, highest paid quarterback in the NFL. You've got Jordan Love right there, Trevor Lawrence, Tua, those guys. Mm-hmm. And I think once we're there, I don't think we need to debate kind of this type of thing. I feel like it's always going to be the next man up. It's going to be his time to shine. That's always kind of the way it's been. So to debate whether they're worth it or not, it's in your own mind what it might be. I think it's always worth it to have the quarterback that you need to be your starter there, and then he's their franchise quarterback. So I think it is worth it to keep him there. Because if you start putting, apples to oranges or whatever and say, well, now Trevor Lawrence, his deal looks really dumb, stupid. I mean, and obviously the Deshaun Watson one is the biggest one because it's fully guaranteed. But Brock Purdy next up being the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, that's going to make a lot of people cringe and things. But I think, again, at this point in the NFL, the way it is now, that's just the way it goes. And I think to have a franchise quarterback at this point is just priceless. So that you pay whatever you got to pay.
I mean, bottom line, if you don't have an answer besides the guy that's your quarterback, you got to pay him. You got to keep him because you don't have an answer. Like, listen, there's too many times teams kind of put a Band-Aid on that position by bringing in, like, an older vet and saying, oh, well, this year we'll kind of get by with this guy, and then maybe we'll draft one next year, but you end up having a losing season. And then it comes to the draft, and you're like, well, we're not picking in the top five. We're just outside the top 10. You don't have a chance of getting a good quarterback, potentially, right? So when you have a franchise quarterback and you deem him your franchise and a guy that's played well, you got to keep him. Now, the same story doesn't go for Trevor Lawrence because you guys know and we know that Trevor Lawrence is not that guy. They just paid him because they didn't have an answer. That's it. They don't have another answer other than Trevor Lawrence, so they got to keep him. They got to pay him. It's unfortunate, but we're in this modern day era of the NFL where the passing game is supreme. You got to have someone to throw the ball. And if you don't have an answer, other than the guy that's currently in your in that position, you got to keep him. You just have to.
Mm-hmm. All right, there you go. Moving on from Brock Purdy. Tyreek Hill, right after the game press conference here, Miami Dolphins, they don't make the playoffs after all the scenarios had played out. The Bengals ended up winning their game, but it didn't matter for them because they needed a few different things to happen. And Tyreek Hill shut himself out during shut it down during the game. And like, and you still are in it to go to the playoffs and still felt like, I guess in his mind, it's like, oh, bruh, this is too much. Oh, there's not enough here for me. No, I'm just done. I'm out. The door's open. I'm out, bro. You know, I just don't get that scenario. I mean, we've seen that a few different times with other diva, you know, wide receivers that just kind of like, you know, shut themselves out of the game. One, i.e., was Antonio Brown, the blow up that he had, you know, in New York with the Jets, and he took his jersey off the shirt, walked out shirtless or whatever, blah blah, took himself out of the game. You know, I'm not playing. You know what I mean? And this is where right. Tyreek Hill has kind of been, yeah. And this is what we've always, I guess, kind of said about Tyreek Hill, and it gets when you hit certain star power that like Tyreek Hill has. Yes, you know, a lot of people see him as the number one wide receiver in the league or whatever. At least even Madden had ranked him that, you know, a 99. I wonder how far down he went this year in Madden, you know, with his ratings. But this is what you get with him. You get the baggage. This is the guy he's always been. When we talk about even the accusations with child abuse and blah, 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 and then even, you know, physically assaulting, you know, his wife and all that, and getting away with a lot of that stuff, the stuff, you know, the getting pulled over by the police, blah, blah, blah. He tried to claim it was, you know, physical assault by the police officers to him or whatever and all this other stuff. It's getting – he did no wrong. Meanwhile, the video was there. You could see it all. And how he carries about himself. Listen to the way he says it all even too. You know, he talks in circles and – He doesn't even put a complete sentence together. He's just, you know, I don't know, bro. Doors open and I'm out. You know, I got to do things for the Hill family and blah, blah, blah. You know, again, talking into third person and all this other stuff. And like he's talking to one of his boys. Yeah. Like, dude, you're talking to the media. You're having a press conference or whatever, and you're not making any sense. And then you're just basically saying, well, I'm out the door possibly. But I know I love you guys still, and I love everything you guys did for me and stuff. But I'm just saying, you know, I'm open to anything right now. You know what I mean? So it's like all of a sudden you're in a relationship and all of a sudden, you know, you come home, you know, you have a living girlfriend, you come out and she's out. You're like, all right, well, maybe she just went out. You know, that's fine. You know, she's not here, just chilling or something like that. And then she's put out on Facebook that she's out here and stuff. It's like, oh, I need real good men out there and stuff. There's no real good men in the world. And you're like, what the hell? What the hell am I? You know, I just came home. You know, where the hell are you? And then basically put it out there that she's available. You know what I mean? And when she comes home, she's like, oh, yep. Hey, honey. It's like, no. What? You know, and then the fact that Mike McDaniel's in the press conference, the head coach, by the way, again, says that, hey, well, I don't know exactly. I was just informed that he was unavailable. So I had to coach the game to try to do the best to win, to get the win here. So you know, I did that. I wasn't worried about that. Like, but mm-hmm. if somebody, like, who told him that he was not available? And if I'm a head coach again, I'm like, yo, you're going in on this play. He's like, no, I'm unavailable, bro. They're like, what do you mean? You're right here in front of me. You're not injured. Like, you're available. Get your ass out there. And he's talked to, like, Tyreek Hill like that, too, before. He said things like that. You know, you're the fastest guy in the world. Well, show me, you know, and do that. That's what we pay you for. You don't get any of that in this game. It was very odd.
Yeah, I mean, plus, I mean, with the way the game was going, I don't think he had the time to just go search for Tyreek Hill and find him and be like, oh, listen.
Well, I hear you.
He might not even have been on the sidelines at that point. He could have been in the locker room. You know, like he was starting to take his pads off and everything. And he, you know, what's to say that he left? He went into the locker room and then at the end of the game, that's when
found out
really what happened, you know? So, for Tyreek Hill, this is really immature, especially for a 30-year-old wide receiver. This guy is not very young anymore. He's a 30-year-old wide receiver, gets paid a ton of money, and his contract doesn't run out until after 26.
Right.
And after that, you have a bunch of void years. You have 3 years to spread out that money, but here's the kicker. is next season in 25. They can't move on from him. The Dolphins can't move on from him. They're going to be in $40 million of dead money. $12 million is not cap savings. That's a $12 million goes against their cap if they were to move on from him. So, the more logical season would be the following year in 26 is when they can get out of it. They can save a lot of cap savings. It's a small amount of dead money compared to what would be prior. But really, 26 to me makes the most sense if they were to move on from Tyreek Hill. But right now, it's just not smart to. And for Tyreek Hill to kind of basically quit,
the last week of
the season, not even when the game was over, and just kind of be like, I'm out of here. Like I'm done. Yeah. I'm done being a Dolphin. I want to go play somewhere else.
Yep.
Dude, if you're looking to try to maybe go back to Kansas City, because that's what everybody's going to be pointing at. They're going to be like, Tyreek Hill is going to return to Kansas City, and then we're going to be amazing again. You know, it's not going to work next year. Like for the Dolphins, it won't work financially. It doesn't make any sense for them to move on from him right now. And for Tyreek Hill, he's got to come to his senses. He's not going nowhere.
Yeah, and I think we've seen this a lot with wide receivers, especially as they're getting older. They don't see they're hitting. Well, they're hitting. When he got traded to the Dolphins,
that was surprising.
That was surprising, but that was big because he even saw it. Hey, this is an up and coming team, young quarterback. We're going to be a contender. And they didn't hit their expectations again. They didn't get where they wanted to. So these wide receivers, they see the end of their career coming, and he's already won a Super Bowl. So, I mean, he's got one. But I think right now, again, he wants to try and jump ship to hit another team to win another ring because they care about their legacy and all that stuff. And that never really pans out for these guys. I can't pick one wide receiver where it's really worked out, or the last one that it has worked out for, that they jumped ship to try and get to a contender to win a Super Bowl, because they're aging. We've seen other wide receivers that have joined teams and won a Super Bowl ring and not even been halfway good. Like, look at Kadarius Toney. I mean, give me a break. That guy's got a Super Bowl ring now? Like, come on, bro. That's a joke. But, Devontae Adams. Hey, I'm going to go to Raiders. Oh, I get to play
with
Derek Carr. Oh, Derek Carr's gone. Oh, I'm stuck here, bro. I got to get the hell out of here. Oh, hey, Aaron Rodgers. I get to play with my boy Aaron Rodgers again. Oh, that didn't work out either. And then again, he says in this one, he goes, all right, well, my contract, I think Devontae's is good until 2026 too, but I guess he has options where he can get out, though, out of his contract.
He has a lot of money coming to him next year. So, $45 million is due to be his base salary. It's going to be insane. The Jets are not going to pay that.
Right.
I really do believe that the Jets already had the decision to move on from Adams or somehow figure out a way to do an extension to kind of smooth that out if Rodgers was to stay. Now that Rodgers is up in the air, there's no telling. The Jets could get out of that contract, save some money. It's going to suck because they're going to have to pay the guarantees, but they have the ability to get out of that contract before it gets crazy and save some money that way. So it's going to be interesting to see just what happens. But that's funny that you brought up Devontae Adams because it was like he thought it was the worst thing ever to be with the Raiders because they didn't have an answer at quarterback right then and there. And even though he didn't want to wait
for a rebuild again, right? So he tried to bandwagon.
No. That's the thing is people are getting it wrong. Devontae Adams is all about his legacy.
Yeah.
He always talks about legacy. He's not worried about the team. Don't matter what team he's on. As long as he gets the ball, gets his catches, gets his yards, gets his touchdowns, he's happy because his legacy is going to always be there. That's what he wants to be known for. He's no longer a team guy. Now he's only thinking about what people are going to talk about him after he's gone. He wants to be known as the best receiver ever. So he's going to try to get his numbers up before it's Father Time saying, okay, you're done.
Yep, absolutely. Joe, all right, before we get into the wild card kind of preview quick, just tell everybody again where they can find more Blindside Blitz and other episodes and other shows just like this.
Oh, our show is great, by the way. So if you guys want to, if you guys want to further support, head over to Grumblings Media, the channel there. We're over 4,000 subscribers. We want you guys to be part of all this. This movement is going crazy. Head over there, YouTube, subscribe, hit that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, share it to all your family and friends that love football, because that's what this is about. We're interactive. We need more comments down below, guys. We need people to kind of funnel this conversation, keep it going, branch off to other conversations. That's what this is about, the most interactive NFL talk show you're going to find. You can also head over to our website, grumblingsmedia.com, where we're going to have tons of articles and other podcasts like ours, whether it be entertainment, political, sports. It's all over there. Make sure you go check it out. And then you can take us with you, whether you're going to work, to the gym, whatever, even a family event. Maybe you could show them while you're there. Like, hey, these guys are legit. The Blitz Boys are here to stay. So anywhere you get your podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pandora, it's all, baby, just follow. Hit the follow, share, comment. Just stay active, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, Joe, wild card weekend is upon us here. The matches are set. And let's talk about the first matchup here, the Los Angeles Chargers and the Houston Texans. So basically a lot of the teams that made the playoffs here were kind of the teams we expected kind of to fall into place here, you know, minus a few. Some teams, again, hot going into it, some backdooring into, i.e. The Pittsburgh Steelers. But the Chargers, I think, are really an interesting team here because they're playing better than I expected in the season. And even what they're doing here, too, not only just running the ball effectively, but Justin Herbert, mistake-free, just about staying healthy, even though he's been banged up at times here and there. But that defense, really turning around this year, being that number one-ranked defense, and Derwin James, too, on top of it, creating turnovers. I think that's he's going to be a big factor, I think, in this game. Because also the Texans, they've – not kind of moved forward. Like last season, they came up on the scene. CJ Stroud looked really good. Like he could potentially be a top 10 quarterback, top five quarterback, he thinks in his mind. But again, at times, errant passes, bad decision making, but they have a lot of talent on that team. They had a few injuries here and there along the way, but they're getting healthier. But I think overall, this could be a tight game. The defenses are going to go at it. And I think eventually the offense will loosen up a little bit. But I think it's going to be a tight matchup all the way to the end. But I think keys to win the game is who's going to get the passing game going.
I think the key to the game is for the Texans. Interior offensive line play has to be better. It just has to be better. That's really what's kind of like, you know, really ruined the sophomore campaign of C.J. Stroud. Like, there's too much pressure up the middle on him. He gets flushed out of the pocket quite often now, and it's leading to those mistakes that he's making. And a year ago, they had not only just a healthy offensive line, but also the protection held up. That's the difference in the Houston Texans now. If they can find a way, you know, to play better on that front, I think the Texans are going to make this a really close game. This is the playoffs now, everybody, because when you think one team, this is going to be easy win for the Chargers, that's what you would think going into it. But playoffs is a whole different breed. Teams know that this is it. There is no next week. You have to continue to win to stay alive. So both teams going to scratch, claw their way to try to get a win here. The Chargers defense has been playing awesome. The Chargers offense, I will say this, early on in the season, they struggled because they were trying to run the ball way too much, way too much. And until they realized, like, hey, we have Justin Herbert. He can throw the ball. You know what? Maybe we'll be a balanced offense. And since then, this Chargers offense has taken off. Ladd McConkey, the rookie, their go-to rookie, wide receiver, has had a tremendous season thus far. And in his rookie campaign, is now going to the playoffs. How crazy is that? So the Chargers offense, pretty good. The defense, obviously, is a very stingy defense. The Texans, on the other hand, they're a team coming into this where it's really going to be critical for their pass protection up front in order to have a chance to win this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, I mean, that's going to be a good matchup. That's Saturday's early game. And then next up, we've got the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens. The Steelers happen to draw the card with that losing that game and get the Baltimore Ravens now, who the Ravens, again, they've always been good making the playoffs again, but it's really not hitting the potential that they've had multiple times, too, and going out early, getting knocked out early this year. Number third ranked offensive points for yardage, number one on defense, ninth and tenth there too. So all together, a solid team. This team doesn't stop here. The offense, again, all wraps around that running attack. Unfortunately, though, with the Ravens, their defensive passing isn't very good. But you've got the Pittsburgh Steelers on the other side. And that has not really been good for the Steelers on the offensive side of the ball. In the last couple of weeks, they've just been plundering through, stumbling and bumbling through games. Russell Wilson looks off, and they can't connect with George Pickens. The drops he's in, just not on the same page.
That's the
one
problem.
One zigging, one zagging. And then they're stopping, getting the run stopped here, and Najee Harris not able to turn it out and get, plays done. But I think even on top of it, Arthur Smith, people, again, are seeing Arthur Smith for who he is, his play calls where he's getting wins, especially when it's short yardage situations, not very smart in handling those, close yardage, situations. So third and short, fourth and short, even when he decided to go on it, not good plays. So I think in this one, I think Arthur Smith is just going to get out-coached on that offensive side of here, and I think the Ravens really know how to take care of the Steelers in this one, especially with them being the home team.
I think what you're going to see here with Arthur Smith is he's got to prove to everybody that in high-pressured situations, he can stay calm, cool, and collected. Because that's what I've noticed with him is, like, during the regular season, no real pressure, no real expectations. And his offensive play calling was really good. And then as you got closer to the end of the season, things were going their way. They lost a few games. It seems like he's unsure of what to call in certain situations. So in this matchup, very critical. Listen, playoffs, there's no going home after this. I think he's got to prove to everybody that he's not going to back down from pressure. He's going to, take it on the chin and keep going and make this offense, put it back to the way it was when you first took over. So Russell Wilson, he's made some missed throws here and there, but man, is there a lot of drops? You're seeing Austin drop the ball for first downs. You're seeing George Pickens, who's supposed to be the number one guy. He's given the opportunity.
Yeah.
He was like, five or six targets last week, and the guy dropped damn near all of them except for one? Mm-hmm.
Except for one that was definitely out of reach where he's wide open.
I'm sorry. Like, you got to make plays. That's what you're getting paid for. And that's why that team struggled last week with the running game, because even the passing game wasn't working.
Yeah, yep.
It's like, what do you want them to do? They're coming into this matchup limping. They're hurting. They need a win desperately, and now they have to face in the first round of the playoffs. They got to face their division rival in the Baltimore Ravens, who have been scorching hot on offense. That is much attributed to none other than Derrick Henry. That dude has been the kind of the unlockable key for the Ravens offense and for Lamar Jackson. I'll tell you this right now. If Derrick Henry was not there and they had whoever else they decided to sign, not Henry, right? I really think that this offense and Lamar Jackson would not have as good of a year as he's having.
Mm-hmm.
Derrick Henry has unlocked Lamar Jackson, opening up the passing lanes, because everybody's worried about Derrick Henry. When he's in the backfield, look at the defenses, how they're lined up. They're so concerned he's going to get the ball. They're doing everything in their power to maybe stop him. So that frees up Lamar Jackson. All these receivers are running wild across the field, wide open, and it makes it so easy for Lamar Jackson to throw the ball. So
And it makes it such a better move for them when Derrick Henry is just hitting you physically and wearing you out and you're trying to stop against him, that opens the door in the passing game, but not only even for Lamar Jackson to take off running and his ability to make people miss and stuff like that. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I mean, but that's part of that offense. You know what I mean? So, like, with Henry in there, it's game over. Like, everybody's so worried about Henry, and rightfully, right? Like, the guy is amazing. Mm-hmm. He's just killing the league this year. So hasn't Saquon Barkley, but we'll get to that. But Derrick Henry has really opened up this offense. And this team, it was the perfect situation for Henry, the perfect situation for the Ravens when they were able to sign him. And that's why they are where they are. And I'll tell you this right now. Steelers got a very tough matchup against the Ravens in Baltimore. It's going to be very, very tough to win there.
Yeah, definitely they got to try and get the passing game going, because I don't think they can go pound for pound with them in the running game. So they got to be able to attack that defense where they're weak in the passing game. And Freiermuth, I'd say that's probably going to be his key guy right there.
Here's the thing, though. If you watch the last 3 weeks of the NFL with the Ravens, that pass defense has gotten way better. They are starting to come downhill. They are breaking passes up. So they're going to be ready for the Steelers. Steelers better be ready for them.
All right, moving on. Sunday's games, the Broncos and the Bills. Broncos, again, making it into the playoffs. You know, had a good winning streak here. They look good defensively here. And in offense, it was rolling. But again, for me, Joe, I think I've texted you before. I'm watching this, and I get it. It's Sean Payton's offense, and he's working it kind of to the T, sort of like what the Saints did. But Drew Brees was running that offense, and it looked a hell of a lot better than it does now. To me, it just looks like they're trying to simplify it and make it so easy and get the ball out of Bo Nix's hands so fast that he can't make mistakes, because he has missed before on some of the deeper throws, that it's just dink and dunk, short, like screen passes, lateral all day long. So, and we've seen other teams, when they play defense against them, just stop the lateral passes, and you can keep this team to scoreless, basically. And their defense only keeps them in the game. And I think that's the key for the Buffalo Bills here. Just tee up on that, this little short screen passes, and you've got it in the bag. You don't have to worry about it.
For the most part, yes, there's that short part of the game where they're going to get the ball out of his hands and everything. But you know what? I got to say, like, there's definitely throws and things that Bo Nix has done by creating extra time out of the pocket to get to guys like Cortland Sutton down the field. I mean, it is, for the most part, short to intermediate type of plays. But then when they want to test you, they can. And that surprises some defenses. I think that's kind of like the coaching or the game plan that Sean Payton wants to implement because he's a rookie.
Yeah.
And he wants to limit mistakes because he's a rookie, but man, is he growing so fast. If you watched a few games in the very beginning of the season, you would think like us. We're like, this Broncos team doesn't look very good on offense. It's just their defense that's keeping them in games, and they're not going to go very far. But then Bo Nix started to develop really fast with this offense, looked much better, got better way faster than I anticipated. I definitely thought his rookie year wasn't going to be very good, and he's proving me wrong, because he's executing the plays that he needs to execute and running the offense the way Peyton wants to, and that's all he ever asks. So that's all you really need. You got a great defense in the Broncos. That's going to give them a chance to win any game. And if Bo Nix doesn't turn over the football, who knows with this game? I mean, honestly, the Bills – you know the offense is going to be ready to go. This is going to be the most amazing matchup. This offense versus the Broncos defense, who can prevail over who. It's going to be exciting. But the Bills defense, I feel like they've gotten healthier. They're one of the healthier teams coming into the playoffs. That's going to bode well for them. And they seem to turn the corner on poor defensive play from the beginning of the year, and now it seems like they're starting to get into the flow of things. So in Buffalo, Denver Broncos got to go there. Who knows what the weather is going to be by the time it's Sunday at 1 o'clock. Is it snowing? Is it raining? Like, who knows? But it's going to be one hell of a game. This is one of the games that I'm actually really looking forward to watch.
Right, right. I mean, because that could be potentially this is one of those trap games. The Buffalo, they haven't been this top seed before. You know what I mean? They've been close. But here they are. You know, they're not the number one seed, but they're up there, you know, second there to the only the Chiefs because of what they had. But they cannot get knocked out by this team here where the Denver Broncos here have that really good defense.
Imagine that.
That playability here, yes, yes, yes. Because, I mean, I don't know, just seeing Buffalo sometimes, like you said, their inability maybe to stop the run at times on defense. But lately, like you said, as of late, they've been able to turn that type around and kind of keep that defense together. Like you said, offense on top of it, and I'm surprised even, too, with the way this team was built here, that ninth overall in rushing, too, you know, and it's not all Josh Allen, you know. So, I mean, that's a big surprise here going forward this season. But they made it work, and I, you know, I'm expected Buffalo to handle it in this one, but – again, you can't sleep on the Denver Broncos in this one. So it's going to be a good matchup.
That's one of those round one matchups you don't want.
Right, right. All right, moving forward, we've got the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles. Packers, again, last year had some good success here in the playoffs and then getting knocked out later on. Eagles, since they got Saquon now, here they go. Look at this. Look at a whole different team now. Last year, they weren't really running the ball effectively. This year, it's all about the run, but then also they've shown that they can attack you in the past, too. Had some injuries here at the quarterback situation here. Again, McKee starts again last week, but again, it's to rest up Jalen Hurts, make sure he's prepared for the playoffs. Saquon sat out, so he didn't, you know, take the record and things like that, you know, so he's resting up for
some
the playoffs.
Some people are upset about that, Jimmy.
Some people are.
Former running backs like Todd Gurley went to Twitter and went nuts. Like, I can't believe they didn't play Saquon to get that record. This is blasphemy. Well, like there was legit NFL players, former and current, that were very upset that the Eagles didn't allow him to at least try to get the record. It was insane.
I get it. Yeah, I get it, because even in this past week, we saw a few different teams really go friendly with their players. Let's get this bonus money for you. Let's get the record.
Mike
Evans, too, on top of it. But we, throughout all the games, we kept hearing, even Geno Smith, they're like, oh, he hit these milestones now. So that all of a sudden, bonus, cha-ching, 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 cha-ching.
Escalators.
And there it is. And parts of their contract, you know. And that's good that even the coaches are down for that to help them out.
At the end of that Buccaneers and Saints game, Mike Evans needed 5 yards to unlock another thing, and they just made a quick play. He got 7 yards, and cha-ching.
That was it. That was it. And
also,
that was the end of the game.
And also tied the one other receiver with Jerry Rice to have
11 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. Pretty amazing.
Again, it is amazing stuff. Again, the last couple seasons, you've had that extra game, but I think I give it to Mike Evans, because he's been that star for them for a while. But then also this season, you remember he was injured for like 3 games or so, two or four games.
Yeah, so basically
so
he
for
did
the,
it
still
with
got 1,000 yards, he did it exactly. So kudos to Mike Evans here and stuff. So I'm not upset about something like that. But here, the Philadelphia Eagles going against the Packers. This is tough for the Packers here. I think it's a hill to climb because the Eagles have been who they were the whole season. Packers have been up and down. Even last week when, you know, you're playing against a team that's not really in contention and the Packers just barely edged out a win in that one. You know, they didn't look very good.
No.
You know what I mean?
Jordan,
and even
Jordan Love
get banged up and then taken out. It's like, that's not the way you want to enter the playoffs here. No. So this matchup doesn't bode well for the Packers going into Philly. A very, you know, it's going to be, the fans are going to be getting crazy here, and it doesn't look good for the Packers for this matchup.
I worry about Jordan Love's mobility, if he's even able to go. Like, you know, you know he's going to be there and he's going to play,
right.
but the mobility factor last week, what we saw when they were close, right? Like, Green Bay, had a chance. They were even thinking of putting Jordan Love back into the game because they're trying to, move up with the seeding and whatnot.
Right.
But
right.
I gotta say, if I'm a Packers fan, I am really worried about this playoff game because I don't know what kind of Jordan Love we're gonna get, and two, if he has to get out of harm's way, is he gonna have the ability to? You know, does he even get re-injured on the first contact that is made or non-contact? So there's a lot of things to worry about. If he's out of the game, it's wraps. It's done. Like you lose your starting quarterback, you have no shot beating the Eagles. Sorry.
Right.
This is going to be a black and blue type of game that, like, both teams are going to come ready. Both teams are going to be physical. But again, like you just mentioned, the Packers offense has been a roller coaster all year. There's a couple weeks where you look at it like, oh man, this team is, they're legit. They threw for 300, 400 yards, four touchdowns from Jordan Love. And you're like, wow, this is the Packers team that we were going to, you know, anticipate and seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also the other side of it where you're like, Jordan Love, what the hell? Like, what happened? How did you turn the ball over? How did you, like, only throw for 200 yards? It's so crazy how this team has been up and down all year, never consistent, now coming into this very tough playoff matchup. I'm a little concerned with Jordan Love and what we're going to see, you know, on Sunday. For the Eagles, they just pretty much the same. Like, they are a team that has been always seen as, at least the last few years, as the team that's going to make the playoffs almost pretty much guaranteed. And now that they've made it yet again, they got all their guys ready. Jalen Hurts is something to watch for, too, because, like, both quarterbacks are coming into this game a little dinged up.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Hurts, I'm waiting to see what the injury report says this week because everybody was saying as of today, like, they didn't see Jalen Hurts in the facility. He might have been just in the training room getting work done, you know, trying to rehab. Mm-hmm. But neither one of these quarterbacks, I feel like, are going to be completely healthy going into this matchup. So I don't know what to expect with this one. We could see some kind of real freaky freaking plays or something. Who knows?
Who knows? It might just control the line of scrimmage here with running because, again, Josh Jacobs has been running his lights out too. He's 1,400 yards almost on the ground. So he's been a big key factor for them with Jordan Love's struggles. And then Saquon on the other side. Again, almost breaking the record of Eric Dickerson here on the other side.
That's
so
the other thing, too.
Running the ball is probably how they want to control the line.
And then you have the defense. The Eagles' defense, much like the Packers' offense, has been up and down all year. Teams that you think they should stomp and not even allow them to score, they gave up the games. So both these teams have had their struggles. The Eagles, I think, obviously they're favored. They're at home. They're seen as a team that's more consistent. But I think if the Eagles have to and if the Packers have to, you're going to see both running backs be heavily relied upon in this matchup. And the defenses on both sides are going to have to step up big time. But it should be a good one to watch. We will definitely find out.
All right. So next up, we've got the Washington Commanders and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is another good one where I'm torn between the two. Because again, Jaden Daniels, the big story here again, rookie quarterback coming through. The Commanders really able to turn it around in one season, leads the team to the playoffs. And then on the other side, Baker Mayfield, second year again back with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to get back to the playoffs once again. Did it without some weapons, too, throughout the season. Found a good running back here in Bucky Irving, too, to really kind of be that standout guy since the other veterans had left the team along with Tom Brady and all that stuff. So now they've got a good running attack on top of the passing weapons that they have. But Baker Mayfield, again, the ability to scramble, make some plays with his legs. He did that a lot in this last game here to secure their spot here and take the division and propel them into the playoffs here. But I like both teams, so I could care, you know, who wins out of this. God bless them, you know, and I'm looking forward to it. But it is going to be a tough matchup. And because each team has their own little things. I think offensively, they have great weapons, great quarterbacks, can effectively run the ball. But then on defense, on both sides, spotty at times, and even for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Winfield Jr., how healthy is he going to be and things like that, and key players on that defense to make some plays.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for the Buccaneers, it's going to come down to health. You know, how many guys are going to get back for the playoffs. Antoine Winfield has been desperately missed. Like, that back end of the defense has been not even close to the capability that they're able to play at without him. So hopefully they get him back. If they do, that's going to be a big lift for the defensive alignment of the Buccaneers. And you just mentioned, like, you touched on both offenses, how they are. They're the bells of the ball. They're the ones that are going to get the plays made. They're going to execute well and put up points. Defensive side, the problem for me is Washington, I feel like, is just they're too weak on defense. We talked about this earlier in the season, how if it got to this point and they made the playoffs, how much of a factor that defense is going to have to – they're going to have to step up. They're going to have to. And they've been inconsistent. They've made mistakes. They've caused penalties. So it's almost to the point where Washington has to outscore the Buccaneers to win this game. They can't really rely on that defense. It's not ready to be the backbone of the team just yet. Dan Quinn, give him a couple more years. Maybe he has it dialed in then. But right now, it's premature for them. They should not even be in the playoffs right now. It should.
Right. It is.
But they've overachieved. Jaden Daniels has lifted this offense to all new heights, and the Commander fans are going buck wild right now. Can't believe what's happening right now. So I think the Buccaneers, Commanders, this is going to be an amazing game. I, too, like both teams. I wish them both the best. But it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be a tougher game to win for the Commanders than it will be the Bucks.
Right. I see that too. And even it could be even the fact that even the running attack here, the Washington Commanders defense 30th in giving up rushing yards here. Mm-hmm. And then also 18th in touchdowns and 22nd in the red zone, to where we know that, you know, the Buccaneers are successful here, and their go-to guy at the red zone is Mike Evans. So, I mean, you got all those guys right there, and who knows, maybe they decided to run in with Bucky Irvin too. So they've got a lot of talent. I think it's going to be a great game to watch. So I think it's going to be just an overall good game to watch. All right. What's funny about the playoffs is, too, being a Giants fan, I don't have to worry about my team, and there's no stress. I can just watch these games and enjoy them, right? no expectations here. And then finally, Monday night, we've got, I think it's even the last Monday night game, the Rams and the Vikings. Vikings go down to the Lions in a masterful piece of defense in that game. The Lions, again, very physical with the Vikings and really messing up the rhythm here with those wide receivers and getting in Sam Darnold's face. And this is what I was looking to see, because that game felt like a playoff game automatically. Yes, they played each other earlier on in the season.
Well, that was fighting for the number one spot.
Right, and you could see the difference even with Sam Darnold. You could see it, kind of a little nervousness. Then he started to get pressure, too, on top of it, throwing high, missing some guys here. He had Justin Jefferson a few different times, unable to connect. But even Jefferson getting out of his safe zone, had a couple of games and balls, especially the one in the end zone where he normally goes up and catches that and gives his feet in, still bobble a little bit enough to where he doesn't catch it inbounds. Another tough game, though, where you've got the Rams, which the Rams are no slouch either. And this is, I think, really shows what Sean McVay even does with this team, to where they lose some guys, but then they have some guys in there, and they kind of retool. I thought even after, they went all in and gave up all their draft stock to get, you know, Matthew Stafford and everything and go all in to win that Super Bowl, that they would have some down years. Sean McVay maybe even walk away. Remember when we talked about, is he going to keep coaching or not? And here they are in the playoffs again. And there, there was that team when we looked at the playoff tree too before where things might move. I said, hey, watch the Rams, and they have that potential, especially with the way their season at the end of their schedule really played well to them. And there it is. Here they are in the playoffs now. But they also have a tough matchup with that Vikings. It's not like the Vikings they lost to the Lions, and then all of a sudden they're done. They've got a tough battle here, both of these teams together. And that's going to be a good matchup, I think. Two good coaches, two good quarterbacks on top of it all, and then the talent and wide receiver all over the field. The Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, you know, Justin Jefferson, you know, it's amazing.
The real kudos has to go to the GM of the Rams, Les Snead. That guy's done an amazing job of reevaluating talent, finding the guys in the draft, finding the guys after the draft, undrafted free agents that have come up and become starters for them. That they've had to recreate or rebuild that defense with a lot of youth guys, guys that aren't well known. Obviously, we know the two rookies from this year, Jared Verse and Brandon Fisk, who've had great, great seasons. But that whole defense has been built from the ground up all over again. And their youth has stepped up immensely, which is the reason why they're here where they are now. That's the reason why they're in the playoffs. Otherwise, we wouldn't see the Rams for a long time. You can say whatever you want with the offense, but we've seen even the offense struggle sometimes. And we're at the stage now where, okay, great, the Rams made the playoffs. We kind of let you guys know that there was a chance that that could really happen, and they fought their way back. With at one point looked very distant, but now they're here. So Stafford, this defense, they got another tough battle. It's another tough one. Don't overlook the Vikings just because of what happened last week. They're still a really good football team. They're still a good defense. Sam Darnold is still a good quarterback, despite his struggle last week. But the Vikings, going in this matchup, they have to do a better job than what they showed last week in protection. They have to. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you have to scheme it to where you bring in an extra tight end, or you got to do something. It didn't seem like they made any real adjustments for that pressure on Sam Darnold. And I got to admit, Sam Darnold had some wide open gimme touchdowns that he overthrew.
Yep.
And it made me scratch my head. I'm like, dude, I understand you're getting pressured, but you didn't have to make a perfect throw. That's what it looked like. It looked like you tried to make the perfect throw when you didn't have to, because there was nobody around your receiver.
Yeah. Yep.
He overthrew Justin Jefferson in the back of the end zone, the one that you were talking about where typically he would get it. But he overthrew.
But yeah.
He did. Close.
Yep.
So, Darnold's got to stay composed going into this matchup. Try not to get flustered, even if the pressure is in your face. Just do what you can. Don't turn the ball over. Don't try to be a hero. And I feel like this is going to be this in the NFC anyway. This is the game that I really want to watch. This is my game of the week for the NFC. Is the Rams Vikings game? Can the Vikings kind of get back? You know, get back into the way of playing that they normally play as Vikings, and not play into the roles of other teams. Execute, get it done, and can the Rams not fumble it, not fumble this opportunity? Because we've seen games in the regular season where we're like, oh, the Rams got this easy.
Yeah.
Like, this is a no-brainer. This is the Rams are going to win the game. And then they struggle, and they don't even look like the Rams team we see the following week. Like, they look so much better. It's a game of matchups. It's a game of game planning. This is one of those games that I can't wait to watch because, honestly, I've been kind of rooting for the Vikings and Sam Darnold and hoping that, you know, they made the playoffs. Cool. But can Sam Darnold kind of increase his value if he's able to steal a game away from the Rams here? and make it to where Vikings got to shell out some serious dough to keep him.
Right, right. And then the Vikings, too, is when they get down there in the opposing team's end zone, down there in the red zone area, they've got to score touchdowns. I mean, there was too many times when they were down there.
Oh, yeah. A lot of
they settled for field goals and missed opportunities as well, even going for it and missing it. So to where even the Lions, yes, they're pinned up against the end zone, and Jared Goff even got away with kind of with possibly a
intentional grounding. He definitely did.
But that's, you know, where they need to capitalize. If they come up with those points, that game's a whole different game. And that's the difference when you're down there, being able to come up with touchdowns other than field goals.
The announcers of that game kind of basically called that out, like, hey, if the Vikings scored those two touchdowns that were wide open, this is a whole different game.
It changes everything. The score doesn't tell it all. You know what I mean? The score looks inflated, but it was close that whole time. You know, you're watching that. So, but yes, this is going to be a crazy matchup.
How amazing would it be if both those teams meet up again in the playoffs?
Well, that's why. I mean, it was funny. Even Dan Campbell afterwards, he said, you know, maybe I'll see you in 2 weeks again or something like that. He's talking to Kevin O'Connell. I'm like, yeah, that's hilarious. Because, you maybe expect that. And even if you don't, again, you've got the storyline again. Here you go, Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff again, you know, the former teams back and forth again. So storylines all over the place. It's playoff time, Joe. Wild card weekend. There you go. There's a preview.
Absolutely.
Let us know in the comments, too, who you guys have for your picks out there. And take us out one more time, Joe. Tell everybody where they can find this show and more like ours here on Grumblings Media.
I'm going to tell you where you can find the G-Spot.
You have to
head over to grumblingsmedia.com. Head over there for all the latest and greatest articles and podcasts like ours. Make sure you show some love over there. Check out the articles that are there, sports, entertainment, political, whatever you're into, it's over there. And help us continue to grow this channel of ours at Grumblings Media on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button. While you're there, you might as well just click it. It's absolutely free. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't hurt your wallet. It just shows support for us to continue to grow. We are over 4,000 subscribers at the moment and climbing. And share to everybody that you care and love. That's all we're asking. And anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, it's all there. Thank you, guys. We'll see you guys next week.